So with that figured out to the extent that it is, why don't we go ahead and get this show on the road? Tax forms in if you're into that kind of thing. If you're in the United States, of course, you know, you guys might have a different tax day. So those of you listening in another country, lucky you. This is the 54th episode of Stage One. I titled this Tensions because, you know, they kind of ratchet those things up every once in a while. This is one of those times. Earlier this month, you might have heard Israel launched an attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria, killing a commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. The Israeli government has neither confirmed nor denied the attack, but even in the presence of a denial, this would be a safe bet. Lacking one, it amounts to a confession. This was by no means lost on the Iranian government, which pledged to retaliate for that strike. That retaliation came over the weekend in which an Israeli-linked ship, Israeli-linked Portuguese-flagged ship was seized by the IRGC, and shortly after this, hundreds of missiles and drones were launched toward Israel, with Iran claiming credit. Israel says more than 99% of those munitions were intercepted, many by American and British forces, of course, the remainder by the U.S.-financed Iron Dome system. According to the Jewish state, there was only one Israeli casualty, a 7-year-old girl killed by shrapnel from an intercepted munition. The British Royal Air Force claims that this was their biggest air battle since World War II, and world leaders are increasingly concerned that a third world war is already underway. And we've talked about that before, just numerically, yeah, right? Go look at the number of quote-unquote main combatants, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, in World War I and World War II. And then you go and you say, okay, well, you know, Israel's at war, Iran's at war, Russia's at war, Ukraine's at war. You accept the reality that the NATO countries are financing the Ukraine-Russia war, and you call them combatants, and boom, World War III, here we are. Not here we come, here we are. It's already ongoing. The U.S. has reportedly warned Israel that if they retaliate against Iran for the strike, they will be doing so on their own, which is comical given what we know about the Israeli survival strategy. It might well be the case that U.S. forces decline to accompany Israel on an Iranian invasion, but it is beyond clear that the United States and Europe will send their forces into harm's way to defend the Jewish state. If Israel invades another country and American forces defend Israeli territory, then Israel can hardly be said to be acting alone in any war it opts to wage, especially as it does so with primarily American financing and weaponry. Israel exists on the whims of American politicians, who in turn maintain their positions at the whims of people whose primary interest is in the interests of Israel. Deprive Israel of American military support, the neighbors they habitually murder won't take much time to rid themselves of a belligerent neighbor. It's hardly news to say any of this, save for the recent strikes. This state of affairs has persisted longer than most listeners to this program have been alive. A bizarre eschatological interpretation of the Bible taught to many well-intentioned Christians holds that the Jewish people must reside in Israel for Jesus to return for the end of the world. Upon his coming, the Jews will be converted to Christianity and God will set the world right. For those that believe this nonsense, protecting Israel is the duty of every Christian, and sending their sons and daughters to die in defense of those most hostile to their interests at home is a small price to pay for the coming of this prophecy. I am no expert on the details of this myself, and others have done a better job of explaining it than I can endeavor to do today. What I can say is that the most well-informed Christians I know call this utter nonsense, and of course, those with less use for the Bible are disinclined to make investments in the return of Jesus Christ. A synergy exists between those duped into pursuing this interpretation of the Bible and what John Mersheimer and Stephen Walt referred to as the Israel Lobby in their excellent book by that title. Mersheimer and Walt published that book in 2007, and I'd get around to reading it about a decade later while held in the custody of Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail. For nearly 500 pages, the book explains the plethora of well-financed groups that lean on every pressure point the U.S. government has to keep the Jewish state as America's top foreign policy concern. Beyond direct aid, one of the things that struck me the most, the United States supplies billions of dollars in what they call loan guarantees to Israel, which never show up as expenditures in any government budget. This chicanery allows the Israelis to borrow money at lower interest rates than they otherwise could, with the certainty that in the worst-case scenario, the United States will repay that debt. But even if the Israelis do pay their bills, as can be expected given their wealth and generous subsidies from America, these still cost U.S. taxpayers plenty of money in the form of increased borrowing costs for the United States, since those loan guarantees count against our credit. Voice criticism of any of this, and these groups will wage a slander campaign against you to call you an anti-Semite. Upon this, powerful people either become anti-Semites in actual fact, or they go to Israel on an all-expenses-paid trip, visit the Western Wall, put on a kippah, and engage in some Jewish religious rituals. As they do, the cameras roll for the hostage footage. The footage is then shown as a warning to others who might dare to offer some criticism. Elon Musk, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Kevin McCarthy, these are just a few of the prominent names to be featured in these propaganda hostage films. What becomes obvious to any observer with a three-digit IQ is that we are not being told the whole story when these hostage videos are being taken. We are expected to believe that these powerful folks just saw the light of Israel's righteousness and decided to wear the foreign decorations of an alien religion because that was the right thing to do after all. But the uniqueness of this ritual is so conspicuous to the same man, that some underlying blackmail or extortion is obviously motivating the hostage to play his role in the propaganda. Ben Shapiro of the Daily Wire spilled the beans on at least one part of the motive: nuclear extortion. According to Shapiro, if the United States does not do everything that Israel wants, then Israel will use nuclear weapons to destroy its neighbors, and the only way to prevent the nuclear end of the world is to do as Israeli politicians want done. How long does anybody really think that that state of affairs could continue? I'm interested to know. 217-688-1433. Let me tell what you think. It has been going on quite a while, needless to say. People have been largely accepting of this arrangement for as long as I have been alive. But attitudes are shifting away from this, I'd say. Fair to say. A poll taken by CNN subsequent to the October 7, 2023 attacks by Hamas against Israel showed that, quote, half of Americans, 50%, say the Israeli government's military response to the Hamas attacks is fully justified. Another 20% say it's partially justified, and just 8% say that it is not at all justified, with 21% unsure. More recently, a new CBS News/YouGov poll found that 37% of Americans want Biden to encourage Israel to stop its military actions in Gaza, slightly up from the 31% who said the same thing in February. Another 23% in the new poll said that Biden should encourage Israel to decrease its military actions in Gaza. So that's a full 60% of Americans against what Israel's presently doing, and the fact that politicians who purport to be democratically elected ignore 60% of the electorate really tells you important things about our government, I think it's fair to say. It is nothing short of comical that I had so much trouble finding this as I wrote this up today, but a lot of you probably heard this already. There's a leaked recording out there of Jonathan Greenblatt from the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, saying that Israel has lost the support of America's youth. In that recording, he said the divide over Israel and the United States is no longer left versus right, but young versus old. Generally speaking, older people are more supportive of Israel and younger people less so. Kind of hard to pin World War II to them, you know? You go running around, you tell some boomers, hey, you know, you're a Nazi. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we all fought them for you. But whatever, please just don't call me a Nazi. The kids, they don't care as much, it seems. That predicts a very dire future for a country whose existence is secured entirely by foreign support. Israel could throw America's weight around today. She could bully her neighbors and make belligerent demands. She could do these things and watch as cowards who govern us and influence us today bend to their every whim. But that survival strategy has an expiration date, and while I don't know what it is, I can tell you it's fast approaching. 217-688-1433. You like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to. So please do give us a call. Let's go take a look. See, let's see here. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and delete that thing there, okay? Like, you know, don't plug another platform in a chat, okay? GTV needs to do something very simple, is what they need to do. And I brought it to their attention. I'm frankly, I'm pissed off about it. When what happens is, I'm not going to get into it. I'll talk about it with them. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be doing this on the air. They have a very simple fix to make. And it's obnoxious that they haven't. And that's all I'm going to say about it. I'll deal with it with them privately. White Power Stream Clip says, GTV may still have issues, but they made a lot of improvements lately. I don't know what the user experience is like over there, but the fact that I'm not streaming there right now tells you that they're not improved enough. 217-688-1433 if you would like to be on the program. Just everything is just, you know, doesn't really make any sense. So anyway, that's not the only story in the news, of course. There's the Donald Trump thing. So Donald Trump, you might have heard, he used to be president of the United States. He got elected a couple times, but the second time they were like, no, we can't do it. And so now Joe Biden is in the White House, and he's a crook, and he's a thief, and he stole the election. Everybody knows it, but, you know, everybody's afraid to say it, right? And so as a consequence of this, they're like, we better get this guy in prison because, you know, he could get elected, you know, a third time, and that's going to be a mess for us because if he has power, then he's going to get back at us, and we don't want that to happen. So they're trying to make sure that he's in prison, you know, as fast as possible, really is kind of the idea. The problem, you know, when you're trying to do that to somebody, it's really difficult to do. And the guy's not a criminal. And so, like, they got to make things up. And then they get all these people together. And now they got this thing. They got him on trial for this hush money thing, you know. So Donald Trump is fundamentally a victim of extortion, you see. He's being blackmailed by a hooker, an adult film actress. You're not a hooker when you run a camera during your pay-for-sex thing. That's a completely different category of action than prostitution because we're dominated by sick, monstrous people. And so Donald Trump went and had sex with a woman, apparently, or that's the story. And then he's like, hey, please don't tell anybody. And she's like, pay me or I'll tell. And he's like, okay, whatever you want, extortionist. Here you go. I know a guy who went to prison. As a matter of fact, I went to prison for a crime known as extortionate interstate communications for doing far less than that, as a matter of fact. Far worse, far less than what Stormy Daniels did to the president of the United States. But, you know, so they put the president of the United States, the crime victim, they put him on trial in New York there for paying the person who was extorting him, you see. And so that's, you know, it's a big, you know, when you do that, it's not a good idea to put the victim on trial. Nobody likes that. But, you know, it's New York and they've got it all, you know, Democrat jury pool and they all hate Donald Trump. So they're just like, yeah, well, whatever. We don't actually have to. We could charge you with anything. We'll charge you with assassinating Abraham Lincoln. We'll just put you in there. Be like, hey, 12 Democrats. Did Donald Trump whack Abraham Lincoln? They'd be like, yeah, yeah, he did it. He used a nuclear weapon, I think. Tell him anything you want. And they're now telling him that he's got to be at the trial every day. Which is not unusual. If you're a criminal defendant, generally that's the most high priority thing in your life, right? You know, you just, it's not even like a subject of controversy. Either you're in jail and you're like, yeah, get me out of the jail, take me to the court. I just want to get out of my cell for a little while. Or you're at home and you want to make sure that nothing goes wrong. So you're like, yeah, I better be there. But, you know, it's kind of a different thing when you're the president of the United States and then you've got, you know, trials in all these different states. And as a matter of fact, while the trial's going on, while the criminal trial in New York is happening, he's got a hearing before the United States Supreme Court. And this judge in New York is like, well, you know, you don't have to be at the Supreme Court. You have to be here. And if you're not here, then there's going to be an arrest. You understand? I'm not saying who's going to get arrested, but somebody's going to, you don't show up for court, Donald Trump. Somebody's going to jail. And you might just interpret that as, yeah, he's going to issue a, you know, a bench warrant for Donald Trump, and he probably would. But you could just as easily interpret that another way, which is to say, like, look, don't make me go after you, people. You know, how many people am I going to have to go through to get to you? 217-688-1433, you like to be on the program. And it, you know, it, of course, you know, they can't just go have a trial and then wait to see what the outcome is and then abide by that, right? They're like, no. Like, we have to punish you with the process. And so they've got the gag order on them. They're like, you're not allowed to talk about this stuff, okay? And so they find out that the judge's daughter is over on Twitter with a picture of Donald Trump behind bars, bragging about her role in all the crap that's being done to him. And she's getting paid for this by some Democrat outfit. And then they go to the judge and they say, hey, judge, you know, there's a thing in the law where you're not even supposed to have, like, the appearance of a conflict of interest. And since your daughter's a paid activist trying to destroy the president of the United States, and since you have financial interests in common with your daughter, as parents tend to do, we're going to need you to recuse yourself. And he's like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, I got to throw this guy in jail. It's, like, really important that I put him in jail. What are you talking about? He's a threat to our democracy, after all. So, of course, the judge is like, I'm not recusing myself. You know, you guys could go deal with that. After we convict you, you go tell that to an appellate court. And then they're like, hey, look, we don't want you. Stop snitching on us. You understand? Yeah, we know it's a big racket. We know it's all corrupt. But if you mention the judge's daughter again and all her corrupt dealings and the reasons that this judge should be recused from the case, well, you know, now you're threatening the judge's family there, guy, and we can't have you doing that. So there's a gag order. You're not allowed to talk about the prosecutor, not allowed to talk about the judge, not allowed to talk about the judge's staff, not allowed to talk about the prosecution staff, not allowed to talk about the judge's daughter. And so Trump, where's the details this year? Joshua Steinglass, a prosecutor on Bragg's team, indicated that the state would submit a request, quote, seeking an order to show cause why the defendant should not be held in contempt after flaunting an order from the court barring him from attacking witnesses, prosecutors, court staff, and jurors involved in a case. Steinglass argued that, among several other instances, Trump attacked two key witnesses in the case, Stormy Daniel and Michael Cohen, in a Wednesday Truth Social post referring to the pair as sleazebags. The prosecution later requested that Trump be fined $1,000 for each gag order and at least $3,000 in total. And Merchan scheduled a hearing on whether Trump violated his gag order for April 23rd. Merchan imposed a gag order on Trump last month, as the former president leveled a series of attacks against those involved in a case, and also Merchan's daughter. Trump has continued to rail against those involved in the case while sharing articles about the judge's daughter rather than explicitly attacking her himself. Trump has also been railing at length about the gag order itself, calling it unconstitutional and un-American. Trump leveled the same accusations against the trial itself while ranting to the media outside of the court on Monday. These are the words of Rolling Stone, which is a bunch of Jewish pieces of shit, right? I'm not calling what he said ranting. I'm just reading it from these fucking scumbag left-wing hacks over at Rolling Stone. This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it, the former president said. Tension built in the courtrooms. The prosecution previewed their case as well. Bragg's team submitted several evidentiary requests that indicate they are setting up to argue that in the aftermath of the infamous Access Hollywood tape, in which Trump declared he could grab women by the pussy with no consequence, his campaign fell into disaster mode, prompting efforts to buy Daniel's silence regarding her alleged affair with the former president. Tortured wording there over at Rolling Stone. You might remember that video, you know, if you're old enough. When he said, they let you do anything when you're a star. Grab them by the pussy, for example. In other words, they let you grab them by the pussy because they're a bunch of whores and you're a rich and famous guy. And they're like, yeah, grab me by the pussy because I'm a whore. Sorry, this is surreal politics. I shouldn't throw around words like P and W there, but you get the idea. It's unfortunate. This is the world that we live in. They let you do that, you see. That's the operative phrasing. But they were like, no, that's sexual assault. He's like, no, I was talking about when they let me do it. No, you're a criminal. Because that's what it's all come to. 217-688-1433. You like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to, so please give us a call. So they're doing the jury selection. And oh boy, is that going to be fun, huh? How many of you have ever been through a jury selection process? I hope zero, but I imagine a couple of you have. Imagine a few more of you might have listened to the jury selection in Sines v. Kessler, that Virginia civil suit pertaining to that Unite the Right rally down in 2017. And I'll tell you, jury selection is a pretty funny thing, man. You know, they bring people in and they say, well, we can see that you have this obvious conflict of interest. Do you swear that you'll be impartial? And then the person with the conflict of interest, they say, well, yeah, of course I'll be impartial. I'm a juror. I would never do anything impartial. I just want to do the right thing. Which is great, you know, if you want liars on your jury, it works out really well because then you get people who are dishonest to judge you. Doesn't work out very well if you want honest people on your jury. Very bad idea because, you know, people who are willing to lie, you know, they usually have motives for doing that, you know. And so we had that problem down in Virginia that, like, there's a guy who literally could have been a plaintiff in the case. Like, you know, he had a business down there. He was present for the thing. You know, he could have been a party to the suit. And we're like, yeah, you got to strike that guy, you know. You only have so many, you have what you could call peremptory strikes, okay? You could strike people for no reason at all. But you got to ask the court, the idea is you got to say, hey, you tell the court, I want to strike this juror for cause. And you say, well, clearly, you know, he could have been a party to the suit. You know, he's got a conflict, he can't be on a jury. And if the judge, you know, if the judge is not, you know, trying to control the outcome of the, if he's trying to have a fair trial, then that's what he does. He's like, yeah, no, of course. But if he's a crook like this Merchand guy over there in New York or this the moon guy down in Virginia that screwed us over, they say, well, no, you know, that guy doesn't have, he just told us, I mean, you heard it right from his mouth. He just told us he's going to do the right thing. Okay. But then, you know, you have somebody else come in and you say, yeah, what do you get your news? Fox News Channel. You know, do you think that you could be fair? Are you going to let this guy go for no reason? No, of course not. Judge, this guy's clearly, you know, he's got a political bias. Well, you got to get out of here, buddy. And so they bring in 500 New Yorkers, and somewhere in there, there's supposed to be 12 of them that are not going to be in the bag for the other side. And that's the theory, and if you buy that, you know, then you probably get taken to the cleaners a lot. The first juror to say he has a strong opinion about whether a former president may be criminally charged in state court is a bookseller living on the Upper West Side. I feel that nobody's above the law, whether it was a former president, a sitting president, or a janitor, the man responded. On the question of whether anything would prevent him from being fair and impartial if selected, the man responded curtly, no. So that's the Associated Press. Jake Offenhart says this. He's like, yeah, at my 4:30 p.m. update telling you the most important things that you need to know about the Trump trial, I'm going to tell you about this guy who's like, yeah, well, let me tell you, nobody's above the law. And I tell you that to let you know that I'm impartial. I'm not saying that to inform the prosecution that I'm repeating a Democrat Party talking point, right? I'm not informing you that I'm repeating the same nonsense from Nancy Pelosi, right? It's a dog whistle is what they're doing. And every reasonable person knows that. So then they say, well, now that you've repeated this Democrat Party talking point about nobody being above the law, save for those nice illegal immigrants who are raping our daughters, can you be fair to the man who all of your media consumption tells you is a criminal? Of course I can. Yeah, it's a whole entire... I'm going to be really fair. When I throw him in prison for the rest of his effing life, it'll be the fairest thing I ever done did, I tell you, Judge. More than half of the group was excused after telling the judge they couldn't be fair and impartial. At least 9 more prospective jurors were excused after raising their hands when Judge Merchan asked if they could not serve for any other reason. Those reasons were not disclosed. It's not unusual for potential jurors to want to be excused for a variety of reasons, including having strong feelings about the defendant. In an effort to make the trial more efficient, the judge said he would prefer to dismiss jurors immediately if they indicated at the start that they couldn't be fair and impartial. That's a departure from a more common practice of questioning jurors more closely individually to see if their claimed lack of impartiality was true. Trump's lawyers have been arguing to an appeals court that he can't find a fair and impartial jury in Manhattan and that the case needs to be moved elsewhere. Another batch of potential jurors is waiting to be called into the courtroom. Merchan has said a total of about 200 jurors are in the courthouse for possible selection. I read elsewhere that there's a total of 500 in the awaiting jury pool if they can't get 12 out of 200. But I'll tell you what. The people who said they can't be impartial, I'll bet you dollars to donuts. They're Trump fans, okay? We saw this down in Virginia. Not one leftist, not one of them, came up and said, I can't be impartial because I know that these Nazi bastards are terrorists, right? They don't do that. They don't do that at all. It's the right that does that. They say, well, I happen to have been informed about this thing before I walked in here. I know that you guys are a bunch of crooks, and because I know that you're trying to put this guy in prison for reasons that don't pertain to the law, since I know that before I come in here, I must inform you that I won't be able to be impartial because I know that this is a scam. Those jurors get excused real fast. The right has an honesty problem. You see what I'm saying? You come up there and you're like, yeah, well, can you be impartial? And the people who want you in prison, they're like, yeah, of course. Oh, I know the answer to that question. I've seen Law and Order dozens of times. I know how to get on a jury. And then the people who are on your side, they get up there and they're like, well, I'm not impartial. I have to do the right thing. I have to tell the honest answer. And I have to say that, no, of course, I know the outcome of this case already. And they get excused and the liars get on the jury. And you get convicted and you go to prison and you get $14 million in attorney's fees tacked on to your civil judgment. Now, if you're thinking about calling in here, just sit there on hold for a couple minutes and then I'll take your call. And if you call in and you hang up, then you don't get on the radio. You see how that works? And if you want to get online, get online now, because I'll end the show if there's no calls. 217-688-1433. You like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to, so please do give us a call. Now, there's a big problem with drugs, you might know. There's people, they do drugs, they do all types of drugs. And one of the drugs that's catching on is erectile dysfunction medication. Recreational use of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising. I think that's a pun intended over at the New York Post. They don't say pun intended in that headline, but I'm reasonably certain. Recreation of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising. Recreational use of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising. For doctors, it's a hard no. Now, that's definitely a pun. It's a big problem, and it's growing even bigger. Social media users are being bombarded with advertisements for easy-to-access erectile dysfunction drugs like Viagra and Cialis, along with affordable generics. And men hoping to improve their sexual performance are taking their chances. That's a hard no. Cleveland Clinic urologist Revdi Boli, the guy's name, he's a doctor, warns. Just because these medications are easier than ever to access doesn't mean you should fall for the hype. Recreational use of the drugs can carry significant risks, the pro warns. Here's why. Viagra, Cialis, and their generic equivalents are what are known as phosphodiesterase type 5, PDE5 inhibitors. They open up your blood vessels and can be used in a variety of ways, including the treatment of pulmonary hypertension or urinary problems. These days, they're most famous for being the so-called magic cures for erectile dysfunction, or ED. Popping a pill leads to an increased blood flow, which means better erections that last longer. And that's where the problem comes in. According to Dr. Boley, if you can get an erection at all, one that's good enough to allow penetration, you most likely don't have an ED, and you probably don't need the drugs. Not that that's stopping men from popping unnecessarily and sometimes expensive pills. Reasons why, according to the doc, include compensating for alcohol or drug use, allowing for longer sessions or multiple sessions, or boosting confidence. And some men are even using the drugs for non-sex purposes, like improving their stamina in the gym. To all of the above, the pros say a big nope with one surprising caveat. PDE5 medications can increase oxygen levels and heart function in people who have cardiac risk factors or cardiac disease. For people who are healthy, there's no good evidence that the medications significantly improve athletic abilities in a standard sea-level environment. Mentioning the altitude is no accident. That's because research has shown that taking sildenafil, which is marketed as Viagra, can improve performance at high altitudes, like on Mount Everest. For most of us, however, that's not an issue. Here are the risks of recreational Viagra and Cialis use. One, if you're taking the drugs, there could be dangerous interactions because PDE5 inhibitors lower your blood pressure. Mixing them with other drugs that do the same thing could be life-threatening, Dr. Boley warns. Even if you go through another source to secure the medication, talk to your doctor about it first and make sure to talk to them about supplements and other recreational drugs that you might be using. Common double-ups that people might know are dangerous, including amyl nitrate, used frequently during sex and better known as poppers, nitroglycerin, used for chest pain and heart-related issues, and certain blood pressure medications. Number two, side effects are common when taking ED drugs. While these are normally mild, they can be annoying or worrying if you don't know what to expect. For example, many users will get headaches, and they are not always mild. There's also acid reflux, facial flushing, muscle aches, stuffy nose, and changes in vision to watch out for. Also be aware of the risk of what's known as priapism, an erection that won't go away for hours, which can be quite, well, they say painful. I was going to say a good time. Luckily, it's quite rare when using oral ED medications, Dr. Boley said, but if this happens to you, seek medical emergency care right away. Number three, you could be psychologically dependent on a drug you don't need. One risk of Viagra or Cialis to boost your confidence is that you might begin to worry about having sex without popping a pill. If you are having severe performance anxiety that's affecting your erections, I recommend talking to your healthcare provider or a sex therapist, said Dr. Boley. A medical professional can discuss your worries about sex, help you set personalized and realistic expectations, and develop strategies to improve your confidence without relying on medication alone. Number four, you cannot trust many of the suppliers. From quick telehealth appointments geared to getting you a prescription, you then fill directly with the supplier to online sellers and even gas station counters. Drugs and supplements are everywhere these days. But do you know who you're buying from? The FDA warns against some common so-called dietary supplements that may contain PDE5 inhibitors as found as close as your corner bodega. Skip it, warns the agency. Where's the supplement with the PDE5 inhibitor? I'm going to go look that up after. I'm actually going to do that. Forget after. I might do that before we're done here today. I didn't know that. Association with high-risk behaviors, of course. Another thing you shouldn't mix Viagra and Cialis use with, alcohol or drugs. One reason is you could find yourself less inhibited and do things more likely. You'll be more likely to indulge in behaviors that could leave you with a sexually transmitted infection, or STI. Using ED medications to enhance your sexual performance when you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs might lead you to make choices that harm your sexual health overall, Dr. Bowley stated. Whether you really need it or just want to use it recreationally, you should be in contact with a healthcare professional first. And there's one really good reason why, beyond safety. Decline in erectile function could make masking a much larger health problem like diabetes, heart and blood pressure issues, or even low testosterone, experts say. Some patients may feel reluctant or embarrassed to talk about their sex life, said Dr. Bowley, but we have these conversations all the time with patients. You're not alone. Our role is to help you understand the risks versus benefits and provide guidance without judgment. Now, your humble correspondent taking Viagra a couple times, and I'll tell you something, it's not because I have a problem getting an erection. As a matter of fact, I got the opposite problem. They, like, bother me. They become distractions. It's like, you know, but I'll tell you something. You want to be taking these things, you know, I don't know, recreationally, but you could do a lot. You could spend money on worse things than Viagra. I'm going to tell you, Viagra will give a healthy man supernatural powers in the bedroom. And, if you want to impress a gal or something, you might think about having it. So that's my health advice. And it's not health advice because I'm just a podcaster and I'm not qualified to give health advice. Now, where are these natural PDE5 inhibitors? Let's find out about this. All right, this is a bunch of crap. I'm not going to read it. I just looked at it. It's not worth reading. And so, since you guys are not calling on the phones, I'm ending the show, and we're going to call it a night. But we'll be back Wednesday for the member show. And, of course, Friday, cursing up a storm. On Friday, I'll probably do, like, the regular format Radical Agenda. You know, I've been talking about we're going to be concluding the Radical Agenda branding for Stage 6 pretty soon. Going to move on to another project. Might come back with Stage 7 sometime in the future. But I'm not going to make all the Radical Agenda episodes going forward a bunch of things about me talking to gay people on Grindr, okay? We'll do a regular format Radical Agenda this Friday, so I'll be back for that. And maybe you pick up the phone. And if you don't, then, you know, then we'll just end it sooner, okay? And, if you like what you've heard today, if you like what you're hearing elsewhere, if you just want me to work for you instead of somebody else, that might be a good idea to pay me, okay? It's not just a matter of whether I keep on working for you. It's a question of whether I go work for somebody else, which I'm definitely going to do soon if I don't get paid. So, you can pay me at ChristopherCantwell.net/donate. I make it really easy to pay me. You can become a SurrealPolitics.com member at SurrealPolitics.com/join. You can buy Radical Agenda merch, the last of it probably, at SurrealPolitics.com/shop. Oh, you guys are really smart. You call in, I tell you that I'm going to end the show. And you're like, oh, I better get on the phone lines. It's tempting to just end it anyway, but I'll take your calls. Caller, you are on your own Surreal Politics. What can I do for you?
Hello. I'm not sure if it's appropriate, but you had a talk with that guy on Friday. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
I live in a city that is, we have a very huge LGBT thing here. So I encounter these people a lot. The one question you asked the guy is, have you ever met a transsexual that is happy?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you 100% no.
No, they're definitely not.
They're not. And there's, I can go off on this community a lot. Like, there's not all gays are created equal. Like, they're different. But with the transsexuals, they
transgender
don't
stuff is a categorically different phenomenon than homosexuality. It's a completely different category of action.
Totally different.
And if the Rainbow Mafia gave a crap about gay people, they wouldn't be trying to lump them in together.
Yeah, like, I mean, I have a really close friend. She's an older lesbian, and she does not like that she's grouped in with these people. She's like, they're making everybody hate me. Yeah. And I do notice with a lot of the what's the appropriate term, transsexual or...
I think they like to be called transgenders now. They want to be called transgender okay. people. They don't want to be called transgenders. I was reminded of that by the woman who was just going on declaratory making herself a male. But, you know, whatever the case may be, that transsexuals now is a dirty word. You know, you could call people queer again. That was outlawed in the 90s. Now you can call people queer again. You're not allowed to call them transsexuals. You can call them transgender people. And pretty soon they're not going to want to be called people because people is part of a species that they don't want to be a part of anymore. Whatever it is, just, you know, you're not going to be able to make these people happy. Just get on with your point, pal.
Oh, my God. I'm just trying to be appropriate for surreal policy.
I appreciate it. I get it.
but I'm like, a lot of the transgenders, like, their purpose is to make you uncomfortable in public, and especially in a city like mine where it's majority liberal, you can't say anything to them about it while they're, I mean, this is obviously a man that's pretending to be a woman and making you uncomfortable on purpose. And then you can't say anything about it because then you're going to get the mob after you.
Well, right. And the people who know it best are gay and lesbian people, right? Like, that's one of the things, you know, I haven't published. There's a lot of calls. There was a lot of talks that I had that are not recorded, sadly, before I started publishing these calls and telling people, hey, you're on the phone for a podcast. I talked to a lot of people about this. And so, like, yeah, you know, the guys on Grindr are like, why are there women with vaginas here? Okay. The lesbians are like, no, you don't get to call yourself a woman and then bring your penis to our lesbian party. Okay. They understand this stuff better than most straight people. Okay. And they've completely had it. And so, like, you know, and that's, you know, it's not the driving thrust of what it is that I'm doing, but I mean, I think it's one of the more interesting components of it, because if you listen to the Democrat Party, you listen to, you know, the fanatics who get up in front of the legislatures or whatever, they're like, oh, this is a straight line from abolishing sodomy laws right to the guy gets to go into the ladies' room with your daughter. And it's not true. It's fake. And everybody knows that it's fake, and everybody's afraid to say it, except for us and gay guys. And that's what I think is pretty funny about it.
Well, you'd be surprised. The older lesbians are not happy.
And the
about
lesbians
it
too. Yeah. It's the Nazis and the gays against the transgender thing. That's what's going on. That's the big funny thing about 2024. Talk about strange bedfellows.
I think the biggest mistake that we make is, like, I'm talking about straight people. Because you have this LGBT alphabet lobby, that's the freaks are the loudest ones, and they do make the rest of them look bad. But we kind of think that they're all in this coalition, and they're really not. There's a lot of contention within their own.
First things first, most of them are like regular people who just don't have any interest in politics, right? That's the first thing you'll observe if you start talking to gay people in settings that are designed for gay people, right? They'll be like, why are you talking about politics? I don't talk about politics. I don't pay any attention to politics. I don't want anything to do with this. That's, you know, what the vast majority of people will say. The other percentage of them are people who are like, you know, they have a regular person. The second largest cohort is people who have a normal person's understanding of the world, and they're like, yeah, I'm a man, I have sex with, you know, I'm a man or I'm a woman, I have sex with members of the same sex, and you have different genitalia, that means that you're a member of the opposite sex, and that excludes you from my dating pool, and by the way, all of the stuff that you say that makes you, that you claim is true is obviously nonsense, because I have a fourth grade education. You know, I understand that I learned in second grade what a penis is and what a vagina is, and everything you say opposite of that is nonsense. You know, and then you have people who are more involved. You know what I found was kind of funny? You know, your display name, you could change it whenever you want on Grindr. It's not like a hard set thing, you know, but you basically have this headline for your profile. And people will put emojis in the thing or, you know, various different things that indicate certain jargon or whatever. There's people who go on Grindr with an American flag in that headline. And I've messaged a few of them and I say, hey, is the American flag to inform other users that you're not a raving left-wing fanatic? And they're always happy to hear from me when I say that. They're like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. You cracked the code,
exactly,
right?
Exactly what it is.
You know? And so, like, those people exist on the platforms and stuff. And so, you know, they're not, you know, there's a certain, you know, there's that Democrat all against, you know, the other against the dominant group dynamic exists, right? And so, you know, they're recruited into that. And that element is, you know, that element is part of the reason it's powerful is because it's accepting of everybody except the enemy, right? Or even if you're like the enemy mm-hmm. demographic and you just want to like adopt, you know, the hostile stance toward that demographic, you know, you can join them and it doesn't matter almost anything else about you, right? You can join that cohort very easily. They're just like, yeah, we just want you on our side. Just help us destroy the system or whatever. You know, but then, you know, there's, you know, the rest of humanity, you know, it just, you know, with a different sexual proclivity.
Well, I know. So one of my better friends, she's a 60-year-old lesbian. She's both Republican. She's, you know, she's all Trump, whatever. The way she is shunned by the other gays, like the left-wing gays, like they treat each other the same way. It was like a black conservative and they get shunned from, like, you're not a real black person anymore. Like, cause you voted for Trump.
Yeah.
They do the same thing within, like,
but they try to claim that and they do it, but they do it with less success here. I would say that, like, you know, I think that the whole, like, if you're not sure if you're for me at Trump, you ain't black, that Joe Biden famous line, you know, from the 2020 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I think that goes over better with blacks than it does with gays, right? Like, I mean, maybe with lesbians they can do that, but I don't think with gay guys that you could do that at all. Like, that didn't fly, you know. I don't think that flew with them at all. But yeah, they try to do that. Like, you know, if you are part of this, you know, if you are part of this, you know, oppressed sexual minority cohort of ours, then of course you're on board with socialized medicine and carbon taxes and sending all of our money to Ukraine. You know,
yeah.
You're on board with the whole entire program of destroying America. And by the way, like white gay guys have been abused by these people many times.
And if you have any objection to any of it, then you're God.
But like there's been things. It's pretty funny if you follow this stuff, and I have, you know, loosely for years. There was like, you know, they hated white gay guys for gentrifying neighborhoods. Okay, so like there was situations where like a gay white couple would move into a low income area, and because they're two guys with incomes, right? They've got money and they're not spending it on kids or whatever. And they renovate their house and they start buying up properties and they gentrify, they raise the cost of living, right? And then the black people have to move out.
And I'll
out.
Say and in my area, that is a very common phenomenon around
right.
where I live, yeah.
So they hate them for that. And they're like, yeah, you're white oppressors is what you are. And you're twice as bad because there's two men, you know? And so, like, you know, they've been abused by this a lot over the years. You know, Grindr has, like, I've talked about it before, that, you know, you can set your, you know, there's a profile field for your ethnic background. You could be, you know, white, black, Latino, Middle Eastern, other ethnicity, mixed ethnicity, whatever. But you can't search based on that criteria because they understand that people will, right? And so they conspicuously removed this years ago, and it was like a controversy that they said you can't put, like, a discriminatory preference in your bio or whatever. And so, like, you know, people are having sex with one another, are keenly aware of the differences between human beings, you know. And so, like, this didn't go over very well, right? It's this, like, politically active thing that's actually acting against the interests of the user base. And so, you know, they're exposed to all of these things and they're negatively affected by it. And so, you know, I'm not saying that that we should far-right elements should start embracing all of, you know, left-wing positions on homosexuality or whatever. But it's like, understand who you're dealing with, I think, is the wise thing to do. Just say, like, okay, no, actually, like, all of this stuff, when you say that, you know, that you have these people on your side and you speak for them. That's actually not true. And demonstrating that publicly, I think, is a thing worth doing.
Yeah. As far as the psychological stuff, like I do notice that the more well together people of that community are the gay dudes. The lesbian women are crazy.
They're, you know, like, I don't interact with them as much. I mean, they don't, you know, there's nothing, there's no female equivalent of Grindr because the, you know, the behaviors of men sexually are very, you know.
Right, yeah.
But so, like, but you know, so I don't have an opportunity to engage with lesbians the way that I do with gay guys. So I can't speak to it as much. But I honestly don't think that.
I wish you could have found a way because they are interesting people, but they're
because
they are
they've
all
got
not.
The element. They've got this added element. I think the lesbians have this added element of radical feminism to it, right? There's not a male equivalent of that, right? You're not like. It's not like gay guys are into MGTOW, say, right? You know, MGTOW is a straight guy thing. You know, I've talked about MGTOW as like the men's feminism, but like the gay guys are largely not into that. They're like, yeah, I don't really worry about the women that much because I'm not screwing them or whatever. But you know, with lesbians, you have this like ideological thing that goes along with it where they add the whole like radical feminism element to the sexual identity. And I can imagine that, you know, that does a number on them, I think, fair to say.
Well, I can give you an anecdotal thing that I know from the people that I interact with. Every single, I will say every lesbian over the age of 35 that I know, they were straight at one point. They were, a lot of them have kids. A lot of them have been with men in their lives. I know a ton of gay guys who have never been with a woman.
Yeah,
I've never encountered a lesbian over 35 that has not been with a man.
I can't. That's not my experience with lesbians. I've known most of the lesbians
really?
I've known. You know, maybe they had a boyfriend or something at some point, but they figured out pretty early on that they were lesbians. So I can't co-sign that. But you know, I think that in my understanding of the statistical. Well, I was born in New York. You know. So, you know, I got exposed to a lot more stuff there, but like, you know, traveling with the libertarians, you'll come into contact with some sexual minorities. Right. But, you know, I would say that my understanding of the numerical numbers on it is that, you know, exclusive homosexual orientation is a largely male phenomenon. Women are more likely to identify as bisexual. But I think that what I'm sort of discovering in the course of talking to people in the course of this is that a lot of people who would tell you that they're exclusively gay are actually not, they're actually not exclusively homosexual. It's just that becomes the pattern that they get locked into essentially because they're, you know, it's not that they lack attraction to women. It's just that that's a pain in the ass, you know, and they are happy to have sex with men. And so they'll just keep on having sex with men. And so I think that maybe the numbers are skewed for that reason, but with women, you know, women can, you know, be in a lesbian relationship and then go be with men and meet less stigma for it, I think, than men who are with men and then try to go be with women. Women are like, oh my God, you're gay. I don't want to be your girlfriend. You know, guys are like, oh yeah, well, you like girls. Well, let's have a threesome, you know? And so I think that what you see, the outward appearance is that bisexuality is more common in women and exclusive homosexuality is more common in males. And, you know, women who are exclusively homosexual, that they don't have any interest in men at all. You know, I haven't studied that subject as closely as I have with men, but, you know, I'm not going to try to speculate on causes today.
I agree. So Milo Yiannopoulos, he said one time that there's no such thing as lesbians. And I actually agree with him.
I don't know that there's no, you know, I think that that's, I don't think that that's, you could almost, I understand sort of the idea
behind
that.
It goes against your primal nature. Like women, our primal nature is to spread seed. It doesn't matter what we're doing. Like, we have to do it. Women are different.
Well, I'll tell you something.
I'm not going to give Milo's argument justice.
Yeah,
but he's got a really good argument on it.
I haven't heard him elaborate on the point, so I can't speak intelligently to the explanation for it. Here's something that I have observed that I'm trying to sort of incorporate with what I'm learning more recently. Okay, I have theorized for some time the increased prevalence of bisexuality in women contra men is, and there's some studies that suggest that this is the case. It stems from the fact that human beings are fundamentally harem animals, okay? That, like, you know, that the male reproductive drive is mismatched with females in part because our natural mating habit is polygyny, that you have one male with several females. And so in females, same-sex contact can actually be, you know, an evolutionary advantage. It actually helps pave over conflict in the relationship and, like, helps you keep you under the protection of the male, okay? In men, that's actually not, it's actually not advantageous in that sense, but you're going to have people who are born roughly one-to-one. And so, you know, I'm not stating this as a fact. It's an idea that recently entered my mind. Well, the reason that we outlaw polygyny is because it creates such intense reproductive competition that people will murder one another over sex, right? And so, like, you want to try to limit the sexual competition in a society so you can have more cooperation. The one of the things that goes through my mind is that, especially with the realization that a lot of the guys who are on Grindr are actually not homosexuals, is that the behavior actually emerges in part because of the same phenomenon. That basically, okay, you know, you're going to have a certain number of men are going to be born, a certain number of women are going to be born, and if the natural inclination is for a smaller number of men to get all of the women, like, these guys are going to do something with all of that energy, and they're going to go after each other, right? Now, I'm not stating that as a fact. It's just it's not a particularly well thought out theory, but it's one that recently entered my mind. And I'm going to go on to the next caller, buddy, because he's been waiting on hold the whole time you have.
Can I say one more thing? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
So at the end of that conversation on Friday, you did say, you know, you told the guy that we do have to have these conversations, and you're absolutely correct on that. And I know you're an old radio guy. I know you remember Love Phones. Are you going to be the next Love Phones?
I never listened to Love Phones, as a matter of fact. I know exactly what you're talking
about.
I never did. I know about it. I know the title.
Yeah,
I knew that
Dr.
it was a popular Drew. Show. I never listened to it, though. Was it Dr.
Right.
Drew? Is that the case? I know that
Well, yeah, Dr. Drew was on it. Dr. Judy. It was
okay.
Big back in the day. Yeah.
So that's how they basically got their start.
You might find a new calling, Chris.
You know, I'll tell you, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to get press. You watch it happen, okay? Like, you know, I'm already in the works of making sure that it gets press. I'm not leaving that to chance. I'll tease that right now. And so, when people start talking about me, you know, having civilized conversations with these people, when that starts becoming a topic of political discussion, believe me, things are going to get interesting, friend. And I thank you very much for the call. 217-688-1433. You like to be on the program, and you're running out of time to do it. Caller, you're on Surreal Politics. What can I do for you?
Hey, good evening, Mr. Kent. Well, glad I found you again. I didn't find you on GTV, so I came over. I just guessed you were on Odyssey.
Yeah, well, you know, they got to fix that thing over there.
Okay, I'll let them know I'm just a viewer.
I know. I'm not blaming you for the technical problems. I get it. Go ahead with your point, sir.
Okay. Oh, sorry, I hit the computer. My name's Dave. One thing is, first off, I want to clarify that my pronouns right now, I'll clarify my pronouns are me, myself, I, and I was didn't okay, so the topic, this whole trans thing, it's funny you guys were just mentioning it, that I've met just in a big city where I live, at times where I've been around, just throwing this out because you guys are talking about it, these lesbian women, they've actually, some of them have given me their phone number, so that might lend something to one side of your guys' discussion there. Maybe it's my nature, you know, my looks or whatever it is. Some of them seem to like me. I'm a kind of a soft-spoken guy usually. Maybe they like that. I don't know. But I'm, you know. So
well, who knows?
My thing was with these trannies. Am I allowed to say that?
Let's say so transgender trannies, people right? for now. I don't think that that's I don't think trannies this on the level with the N word. But let's do serial politics. Let's say transgender people are transgenders. Okay.
Okay. Sure. These trans
on Friday they, you call in, you call them whatever they want. Okay, whatever you want. Okay.
Sure. I don't mind using their pronouns. The transgender people, I'd like to have respect for everyone. Honestly. And, but I do feel, and I mean, logically reasoning this out, I do believe that it is overall a globalist type. People would say cabal, deep state, whatever, but globalist overall, maybe. If I'm just talking politically, I may even throw in Zionist, but I'm not sure. It's an attack, obviously, on our civilization. These people are being used. Okay, because I don't think they would have had the power that they've achieved without massive support from somewhere that I cannot pinpoint. And, overall, them doing their lifestyle and all that, it was when I was growing up, it wasn't like these people were not, I mean, they weren't viewed very well, but I think it's similar nowadays, except they have, the thing is that they had it. Okay, I'm just going to say how it was, not that I'm not saying it's good or bad or whether I'm for or against, but they had an area of the city that they had as their own, and pretty much, and they're still kind of there now, except actually it's been diluted now since they've been accepted, so to speak, and gay men are allowed to be married and all this stuff now. It seems to be almost like it's actually kind of like diluted their culture in that area where they formerly had more, kind of like their own activities going on. But the thing is, overall, what I find concerning is the overall attack on what we're calling, I guess, well, basically we'll talk about North America. North American, the society, the civilization, our moral standards, our faith, religion, even without religion, it's just an attack on the overall ability. Look at these young children now going through the schools. I mean, it's so confusing. Thrown in with the multiculturalism, which was already a big problem, in my perspective, the way it was handled, if I'm not going to be totally against it, I would just say whoever did it, it was like handled in a way which was kind of like, especially harmful to a lot of people. And of course, now it's openly, open season on these white children. And I'm throwing in that on top of that with this transgendered people being used, and of course with their own self, what do you call that, their own drive from within themselves being pushed to the forefront, they, in my view, are doing unnecessary harm to the children that are growing up now, and especially with the white children who are targeted. I find it's scary, and we're on like a precipice here, Mr. Cantwell, for like the next generation coming up. I mean, with after
Look,
the pandemic the, and everything.
The left is fundamentally at war with existence, okay? And actually, as you say this, I brought up something that was very influential in my rightward shift in my ideas. It's actually an essay by Murray Rothbard titled Egalitarianism as a Revolt Against Nature. I'm going to read part of that to you right now. The genetic basis for inequality of intelligence has also become increasingly evident despite the emotional abuse heaped upon such studies by fellow scientists as well as the lay public. Studies of identical twins raised in contrasting environments have been among the ways this conclusion has been reached, and Professor Richard Herrnstein has recently estimated that 80% of heritability in human intelligence is genetic in origin. Herrnstein concludes that any political attempts to provide environmental equality for all citizens will only intensify the degree of socioeconomic differences caused by genetic variability. The egalitarian revolt against biological reality, as significant as it is only a subset of a deeper revolt against the ontological structure of reality itself, against the very organization of nature, against the universe as such. As the heart of the egalitarian left is the pathological belief, at the heart of the egalitarian left is the pathological belief that there is no structure of reality, that all the world is tabula rasa, that can be changed at any moment in any desired direction by the mere exercise of human will. In short, that reality can be instantly transformed by the mere wish or whim of human beings. Surely, this sort of infantile thinking is at the heart of Herbert Marcuse's passionate call for the comprehensive negation of the existing structure of reality and for its transformation into what he divines to be its true potential. Nowhere is the left-wing attack on ontological reality more apparent than in the utopian dreams of what the future socialist society will look like. And he goes on at some length, but you get the idea. It's literally, they are at war with the world and the human condition, okay? And everything they do, it's that's why they tolerate contradictions, right? That's why there's so much cognitive dissonance. Like, that's actually a feature, it's not a bug. When you see them, you know, say something and it's contradicted by the last thing they said, and they say no, that's part of the pathology, is that it's like, no, the idea that there is one truth and that it can't, you know, that truth can't be in conflict with truth, right? That idea suggests that there is truth, right? And they're at war with that concept.
Did you use the word ontological? Like, literally, it's relating to, like, a medical condition?
No, no, no.
What is that referring to?
Ontological. O-N-T-O-L. Oh. It's not oncology, like cancer. It's ontological. It's,
yes.
Let me pull up the definition. All we're relating to ontology or relating to the nature of being. That's what it is. The nature of being.
Okay. Excellent. And, you know, I have two responses right off the bat. One is from the famous boxer Mike Tyson. You know, everyone has a plan till they get punched in the mouth.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And number two is, I had a good response, but and I might have forgotten it, so I'll just move forward with. The response was, they can say this from the safety of the civilization that people before us, and us included, have built and designed for them to be safe in and not being, like, at the mercy of nature and other tribes that want to come in, you know, and loot, rape, and kill people. So we've built this nice cushy spot, and now they're coming out, you know, nascent from the womb of our civilization, as, like you said, this kind of, like, weird, I think we should have respect for all people, but it's kind of like a bastard idea that's kind of, like, just come out, and now it's turned, like, ontologically oncological. So it's like a cancer and it's metastasizing. That's what I'm hearing, like what you're saying and what I've been looking at. They would never survive if they hadn't been nurtured in our womb of our civilization. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, and this is what caused me to walk away from libertarianism, which was like, you know, your ideology actually exists under the protection of something that's capable of actually running a society. Your ideas are not, theirs are, and the only reason you're able to continue doing what you're doing is because other people are making it possible for you, right? And so, like,
I have a buddy like that. I've been telling him that, and he's finally kind of admitted that just recently. After, I guess, guy's been like that for 30 years, I guess, and he said, you know, I'm realizing now, like, it's kind of like this can't exist with these hordes of people that are coming in just to, like, destroy my community. That's what he said to me.
Yeah. That's what it is, buddy.
I would also say, yeah, and furthermore, Mr. Cantwell, so having respect for all, okay, in our, where I live, we have this, like, these Bill of Rights kind of things, or we're even on the, like, the transit system, right? You know, the Bill of Rights for the state that I live in, which is in Canada, state in Canada. And I was always like, okay, like, if we'd just been taught that as well, because I don't think I ever read the full thing of these Bill of, like, Rights of the state, not the federal Bill of Rights, but the state one. Like, if we all just did that, which I generally did in my life, because my parents taught me to be respectful to others, right? If we just did that, and these people, like, we don't agree with each other in general, individual to individual, but, like, for the general society, the people that are doing the stuff we're talking about, we're talking about this transgender people, and, you know, the SOGI, up here in Canada, they call it sexual orientation, gender identity. That's the stuff that they put in the schools to educate the children now, you know what I mean, with all this kind of stuff. So excluding that for now, like basically precluding that before it started, which was around 2020 up here, because of course that was right after the reset and the pandemic. Then they were able to bring that in, but like before that, people, if they just were like honestly enforced to have respect for others, even if whatever their sexual orientation is. And I would just generally, if you're at a church or anything like that, or you're at family or community organizations or community centers, then you wouldn't have like these people as a political force showing up and disturbing this society that we're talking about, which allows them to even exist. You know what I mean? Without like under the threat of constant like harm, you know? So like, I find that it's kind of sad that we let it get to this point where we didn't defend our institutions, religions, events, of our general neighborhoods from this kind of assault. But I know it's been from a very slow, incremental brainwashing that's gone on and on. And by the way, I'm going to throw this out. I don't like to bring these guys up, but, you know, the Nazis in Germany were burning those books. And those books that I was taught in school, which was they were burning some kind of great library intellectual book, turns out they were all just the School of Sexology books, which were introduced by, it so happens to be most likely, I believe it was some Jewish individuals. And, of course, that ties into the whole anti-Semitism thing in Nazi Germany. But apparently, what I'm told now, but they've been hiding. They still don't. Now they're just admitting up here. A lot of people are mentioning. A lot of people, it's getting around that the books were the transgender people's books by a guy who ran the School of Sexology. His name was Magnus Hirschfeld, and he had a guy named Dichter, I believe, who was his first operation that we know of, transgender people operation. And the Nazis went there, burned the books that were in the schools and the Nuremberg University. And so that doesn't, like, okay, so what I'm getting at is, it's literally 100 years from around that time that now, because it was, I believe he performed the operation in 1920. So in 2020, now they're bringing it into the schools here. And it's like just history repeating itself. And yet all this is covered up. And I could go on to more about what the Soviet Union, but I'll say that for another night. But the point is, it's literally they've managed to like seep it into our society after defeating the people, and we helped defeat the people who were trying to stop it back in 1920. I mean,
well,
where
here's,
are we?
Here's what's gonna. Here's where I think we are. You know, the saying that history repeats itself. You know, some people. Put a little shine on that, say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, right? Well, here's what happens, okay? There are people who come in and they say in the name of freedom or liberty or, you know, tolerance, whatever it is, we have to start tearing down all of the things that make civilization possible. And, you know, people feeling stifled by order or whatever, reasonable folks, they go along with some portion of that. And they say, yeah, let's loosen up a little bit. Let's, you know, let people experiment, have some innovation. Let the market decide these types of things. When the consequences of that become evident, you know, something happens, you know, it's organic that people make rightward shifts in their ideological views, right? It's not mere coincidence that people's views are shifting rightward politically. It's the predictable consequence of the circumstances, right? So this is a corrective mechanism. It's part of our psychology. It's part of the, you know, it's part of the psychology of the group, say, that, okay, we see that things are spiraling out of control, and now we want somebody to come in and fix it, you know? And that's what's happening. Now, what the left is doing is trying to coercively prevent that from being the case, or at least to prolong the leftward drift. And my prediction is that they can't do that forever, right? Like, that, like this is actually, this is as hard fixed as sex in the human psyche, that like you know that eventually there's going to be a correction, and what they're doing is they're stretching out a rubber band, and eventually that rubber band's going to snap, and it's going to hurt their hand pretty bad, and the further they stretch it out, the louder that crack's going to be.
Okay,
thank you very much for the call, my friend.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming on. I hope you come on again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we do this every Monday, 9:30 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. If you're listening on some of the platform at some other time, I invite you to join us for live program. Those of you who are listening on the live show or listening at some other time, you know, just like, you know, be here at the beginning of the show. After I'm done with my monologue and I tell you to give me a call, give me a call. Don't wait. Just call me. It's pretty easy. I'm an easy guy to talk to, you know, and then we'll have a lot of fun. So if you want to keep on having fun with me, you better pay for it. SurrealPolitics.com/join to become a member. You get members only bonus content at SurrealPolitics.com, at ChristopherCantwell.net, at FullHouseMembers.com, FullHausMembers.com. And we're going to be bringing on more as time goes forward. We've got, you know, the most recent members only bonus content at ChristopherCantwell.net is a call from Grindr that was just, it completely went off the rails. It didn't meet the branding that I'm really looking for in the thing. It wasn't very thoughtful. It just ended up with me like calling the guy names and telling him to commit suicide. But it's very entertaining. So that's, you know, kind of the idea. And so if you pay me, not even $10, it's $10 a month is the cover price. But, you know, if you use code AGENDA33, then you get first 3 months at 33% off with code AGENDA33 at checkout. And that would be a great idea because then, you know, make out like a bandit, you know. So you go ahead and do that, surrealpolitics.com/join. You become a member, and then your login credentials will work on all the member sites, and there's going to be more of them in the near future. You should probably just give me more money than that because, you know, I need, you know, I'm great. I'm very talented. You don't want me to work for somebody else. So you go to givesengo.com/SPM, so like Surreal Politics Media, and you can give me like as much money as you want with a credit or debit card. When you are watching the live chats, the live streams over on Odyssey and on Rumble, you can send like a super chat or a hyper chat, they call it on Odyssey. As a matter of fact, Libertariat sent me $14.33 earlier, said F in the chat for all the drony boys. Well, thank you very much, Libertariat, F in the chat. You know, and I take the cryptocurrency, I'm good with that stuff. You go ChristopherCantwell.net or SurrealPolitics.com/join, either one will get you, I'm sorry, either website slash donate. There's donate links on both sites. And that'll get you my Bitcoin and my Bitcoin Cash and my Ethereum, my Monero, all that different stuff. And if you want, like, if you want to use Bitcoin and you don't want to give it to the public key that everybody uses, I'll get you another one. Just send me an email. ChristopherCantwell.net/contact. I got the Cash App. It's Edgy Chris. And Strike Payments, strike.me/Cantwell. There's lots of ways. I try to make it very easy to pay me. You know, I wouldn't want you to work so hard. You're already forking over the money. So I try to make it easy to do. And I hope that you take advantage of that real soon. All right. So we'll be back Wednesday for the member show and Friday cursing up a storm. Thank you very much for tuning in to Surreal Politics. Had a good time. Thanks for everybody who called in. Thanks for everybody who pays for the show. See you real soon.